This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. Well, that was a weak opening. So, I am driving home this week. And it sounds like I need a little power steering fluid in my car. I'm driving home under a little bit more unusual circumstances. I had mentioned last week that I took off because I'm working on the Marvin the Martian costume, and we're pretty good. I just needed a little extra time, so I took off today as well because there were 18 work days in the month, and I typically just need 16 to make budget. So this is my second day taking off. And of course, we had July the 4th, which fell on a Thursday as well this month. So I have declared my heart here a little bit because honestly, I could get used to this only working 3 days a week pretty quickly. So we'll see. I have crossed the 1 year boundary now. July 5th was the 1 year until I can retire with full benefits. So, and actually it's November of 2025 is what it is. Or it's July of 2025 because is that right? That's right. It's July of 2025 because I had to be 66 and 8 months. And so I will be 66 this November. Another 8 months puts it up until July. So my official full benefit retiring date is July of 2025. At that point, since I do everything in this content, I should have just released book 22, and I should have half of book 23 written. This has been an extraordinarily interesting adventure, but we'll talk about writing in just a second. All is going well at work. We're currently building an interface from some of our systems out to a learning platform. That seems to be going fine. We're just building things out, defining how we want to do things. I had a little bit of a scramble last night because I was finishing up with a few things because I knew I was going to be off work today. But that's all going fine. We're putting together the data. I left the guy that I work with enough stuff where he had stuff to work on while I was out for these 2 days, because when I take off on Thursday, that means I take off on Friday as well. And so, you know, I have like a 4-day weekend. I can get used to this. So it's all very, very interesting. But things are going fine at work. We're having discussions about how do we spend the last year, and there's a lot of discussion about, okay, we need you documenting things, but then as the days come and the days go, there's always enough stuff to fill the days, and that's how that goes. So last week I probably mentioned that I had a breakfast with a friend, so even though I was taking off work, I went ahead and drove in, had breakfast with a friend, and then kicked around a little bit. Forgot to record the podcast. I am remembering to record the podcast this week because I left myself an appointment on the calendar. Be kind to your future selves. So this week I had breakfast with a friend, and that breakfast happens at 6 o'clock in the morning, so that he can get on to work and all that sort of thing. So just finished up, had a great breakfast with my friend. Talked about this, that, and the other. So all of that was good. So now I did a little bit of shopping. Now I'm driving back home. And then I really think I'm going to throw on my exercise clothes and go out for a jog. And I might actually do a 4x4 as well, because I didn't do my 4x4 yesterday because it was raining. So I just happened to think, you know, you've just had breakfast and you've just eaten, but you could probably use that. So I may go ahead and do that when I get home. But work is good, all is well. Writing is good. I'm on track with, I've a few hundred words behind this week, but it's fine. I'll get those made up today, because after I get back from my run, I'll get those done, then I'll grab a quick shower, and then I'll get to work on Marvin the Martian. I'm close now, so I'm putting together the, the it's the skirt that Roman soldiers wore. It's just strips of leather. And it's not called a skirt. It looks like a pleated skirt. It's not called a skirt. It's called, it's P.T. Turgeres. Turgeres? I've got to learn that before I do Marvin the Martian. So I'm working on that. Marvin the Martian has one of those, but it's really more like a flat tutu. You know, it's probably more like a pancake tutu is what it is. And so I'm building that now. Once I get that built, I have the gun yet to build, which shouldn't be that big of a deal. Then I have the shoes to build. And they won't be, those won't be hard, but they'll, you know, they'll take a little time. So once I get that all built, then we start going into painting. Doing painting and gluing and getting all that under control. But at this point, it's looking pretty good. And I think I can manage the weight of Marvin the Martian. So we'll see. I've got a little buffing to do and, you know, a little primer to do and et cetera, et cetera. But it's looking like it's going to be okay. So, yay. I did slip it a week. Technically, it was going to be tomorrow that I celebrated, but it's July the 24th is the actual first day that Marvin the Martian appeared in 1948. 1948, Marvin the Martian made his first appearance on July the 24th. And so it'll be close enough. I mean, this is, what is today? Today is 18th. So next Friday will be the 26th. I can make that work. So yeah, this has been an adventure. I still have a few little details to work out, but once I get the shoes put together and the gun put together, we are going to be to the point where it's doable. I think I have pieces of the bit. I'm not sure I have the final version of the bit, but that will come. If there's a final version to do, that will come. So that'll be fine. So all is well. Obviously, the hot topic of conversation now is the attempted assassination of President Trump, which is an extremely fascinating thing on a lot of fronts. And the buddy I had breakfast with, he said there's all kinds of conspiracy theories, which of course there are. You know, and his one thing, he said that the thing that just amazes him is the photo of Trump. Oh, my little recorder is falling off the side here. Sorry, I didn't notice that. Hopefully it's not been thumpy. He said the thing for him are the photos. You know, those photos, he said, they're such iconic photos. And he said, they look so staged. I said, I know, I know. you know, you've got these amazing photographers that the shots are going off and they're right into the fray. I mean, they're just amazing. And they're adjusting their composition and there's, I mean, it's just, it's incredible. But that, those photos of with him with his bloodied face and fist raised, I mean, it's incredible. It looks so staged, but it's amazing. But obviously, I've been talking for a while about the fact that, you know, somebody is going to try to assassinate Trump, that the machine and the apparatus. And this really is a fascinating example of circumstances that can be interpreted in so many different ways. You know, it would be easy to see this as a plot because there's just so many interesting things about it. And by the same token, you know, you could look at it and apply Hanlon's razor. I think it's called Hanlon's razor, which is don't attribute malice to something that can be explained with stupidity. And I understand what that's trying to say, but by the same token, I don't think it takes into account everything that should be taken into account. And so just to review some of that, I'm sure you all know the basics of what happened on Saturday. Trump was at a rally. He started speaking. Shots ring out. One bullet goes really close to his cheekbone. The next bullet actually grazes his ear, takes out a chunk of his ear. You know, the third bullet misses him entirely. And the only reason he's not dead is because in the last milliseconds, he twisted his head to the right. And there are plots and there are graphics showing how if he had not twisted his head to the right, he would be dead. I guess they took videos and things of the trajectories of the bullets and they took a model of his head. Somebody did. And I mean, it's astonishing. There's video out there of a graphic, an animated graphic, that shows what would have happened if he hadn't turned his head at the last second. So, and of course, there's all sorts of questions, and there's all sorts of speculation, and nothing is really finally known at this point, although all of this is getting clearer. Now, and it's really, really an interesting collusion of things. I will say right at the top that I don't think we're done with this. As to how much pre-planning there actually was with all of this, it's really, really difficult to tell. One of the interesting things that I heard Robert F. Kennedy Jr. say, I think he made the statement. He was talking to Bill Maher. That was an interesting conversation. And Kennedy, at one point, just said, you know, they killed my father. And Bill Maher kind of scoffed a little bit. And he said, well, he said, but that was Sirhan Sirhan. And, you know, Robert F. Kennedy went into this long speech about the autopsy and his father and how that he wasn't even supposed to go on that route out, but he was grabbed by the arm by one of the security details and led out that route, and how that the shots that killed his dad actually came from behind, not in front. And Sirhan was in front of his father, and that his gun only had so many bullets, and they had accounted for every single one of those bullets, but his dad was killed by shots from behind. And, you know, and Bill Maher is, like, listening to all this, and he's saying, well, why doesn't anybody talk about this? Why? And, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. just says, well, and very much implies that, you know, CIA or somebody like that was responsible. You know, so it's hard really to decipher, because these agencies have had so much practice, what really is going on here, especially in light of the fact that Sirhan, during that conversation, one of them made the claim that Sirhan says that he can't remember anything from that day. And so, you know, you've got the MK Ultra program that the CIA was working on. I have to believe that the CIA didn't suddenly get a pang of consciousness and say, oh, you know, we really shouldn't be trying to train humans how to be our assassins without their wills, because that's just not morally right. Okay, right, right, sure, the CIA is going to come up with that solution. Because the CIA has been assassinating leaders around the world for decades. They just... you know, they're part of a cadre of people in Washington who think we're the greatest superpower in the world and we're going to do whatever we want to keep it that way. So there's a lot of pieces in play, but one of the interesting things about all of this is to consider all the pieces of this and all their interplay. And of course, there's been plenty of discussion about this. This particular information comes from a podcast by Chris Williamson. Modern Wisdom is the name of his podcast. And he kind of had an emergency podcast where he pulled in a friend who I believe is a Green Beret, sharpshooter, been on security details forever and ever, et cetera, et cetera. And so they discussed it. And, you know, just some things that are important to note. This man who was the Green Beret in security detail and a sharpshooter, he said the first thing you have to do is you have to step back and kind of look at the whole thing of what's going on with Homeland Security. And he says, when you look at the actions on Saturday, which clearly had inept, negligent, incompetent, stupid people that did an abhorrent, dangerous job of doing the one thing, you know, which is keeping their principle alive, you know, they did nothing. There was only the reason that that man is not dead is because he turned his head at the last second. And... even I, as a non-professional, as I'm watching the footage of this, I'm going, wow, this is not good. This is just not good. They don't seem to, the Secret Service doesn't seem to know what they're doing. There's just some things that are just silly about it. You know, I feel bad for the women who were on the detail. Because, like, the one woman in all the shots has her arm around Trump's waist. And she's bent over, you know, what, what, how can this be helping? You know, her job is to throw herself in front of the president and protect him. And she, her head, you know, basically comes up to the middle of his chest, and she's just too small for the job. All there is to it. But of course, as has been widely noted, the head a female who was put in charge of Social Security on Biden's presidency, said that her big goal was that she wanted 30% of women. She wanted the Secret Service to have a population of 30% who were women, because that's what her goal was. Well, okay. So you have that. They're doing a lot of diversity hires. But, you know, they have a job, which is to keep the president alive. He said the other thing, of course, was the extraordinary oversight of leaving that rooftop open. And Chris Williamson was asking him, so 150 meters, is that, you know, is that the normal perimeter for something like this? He said, no. He said, the perimeter that you want to control is 1,500 meters. And the reason you want that is you want to control a perimeter that will take care of everything, including small arms fires and small arm fire and explosive. He said, it's 1,500 meters. It's not 150. So, you know, that's just completely off. You know, he said the edge of the roof was something like 131 yards. He said back where the shooter was is about 150 yards. And Chris Williamson said, so is that a hard shot to make? And he said, in Texas, you set up hunting blinds. You set the deer feeders up 150 yards. From where the blind is that you're going to be shooting from. And he said, and that's where the hunters climb into their little hunting box and shoot the animals when they go up to eat the corn. He said, at the end of the day, he said, 9 to 11 year olds, 7 to 11 year olds, every single one of them would be able to make that shot. And he said, you know, I could take you, I think he said later somewhere, he said, I could take you out within just, you know, whatever, 10, 15 minutes, that rifle will shoot a cluster of bullets that's only like an inch and a half wide at that distance. If you just get it supported and target in and shoot. So he said that's not a hard shot at all. And he said it's completely inexcusable that the roof was left open. He said, the other thing is, he said, I'm watching the snipers. And he said, I'll tell you, the gear they had was spectacular gear. He said, anyone who's a sniper, you know, we would look at that gear and go, oh, great this, great that, great the other. He didn't want to go into too much details because he was concerned about what the release of the information of what those teams carry might be used for ill effect. But he said, I tell you, they were kitted out. They had great, the anti-assassination or anti-counter, I forget what they call them. The Secret Service snipers, he said, they were good. He said, and it's obvious they're focusing on that roof for minutes, maybe 40 seconds, I can't remember, ahead of time. But the guy, the Green Beret sharpshooter guy, made an interesting observation. He said, you know, they're trying to figure out what he's doing over there. They obviously want to be careful because they just don't want to kill a civilian. But, you know, frankly, if a civilian takes a telescope up onto a roof and he's lying prone, hidden by the building mostly, and he's pointing it at the press, okay, well. But he said they didn't want to take the shot. He said what was interesting is he said they kept coming off up their scopes, back down, trying to figure out what was going down, coming up off their scopes, back down. He said, and then when fire, the gunshots start going off, he said, at least one of these guys flinches. He pulls back, and then he gets down on his gun quickly. And he said, when I saw that, he said, I thought to myself, these guys have never been in a firefight before. And that instinctive reaction to pull back when the gunshot starts shows their inexperience. So you've got inexperience even on the part of the snipers who are up on the roof. And he went through a bunch of details about a bunch of stuff and, you know, including the fact that 4 minutes before, people are shouting and yelling, "There's a guy on the roof, there's a guy on the roof," you know, and how could he ever come that close? And of course, he had a lot to say about security and DEI and the fact that it appears there was multiple members of the security detail who were Secret Service, who were supposedly the best of the best, and their response, you know, was just abysmal. There's pictures of one of the women who were on the team cowering behind Trump. So that's not her job to cower behind. He said there's other photos of another woman who was on the team that when the shots, after the shots are ringing out, she's still down on the ground. She has not run up onto stage and plastered herself against Trump. And of course, there's the footage of the three ladies who are in front of the car that they've hustled Trump into, and they just all look blistered. I mean, they're obviously extremely nervous. One is trying to get her gun in her holster, can't get it in her holster. And the guy was just talking about that, and he said, "You see that she has her holster rotated around behind her left hip." And he said, "That is not where you put your holster because your clothes get in the way. You can't get to your gun." He said, "The way a professional does that," as he said, "he puts it in front with a natural line where it's right in line of where your hand is to where you can grab it and get it out." And he was talking to Chris Williamson about, you know, "We should play a little game. I'll give you a paintball gun. You can give me a paintball pistol, you know." And he said, "You put your holster wherever you want to. I'll put my holster where it's supposed to be. And then we'll say go and we'll see who gets shot in the face first." He said, "Because you either put it in line where your hand is or it comes up." And he said, "A lot of times when you see Secret Service people, they will have their hands up and they'll be gesturing with their hands, or they'll be talking, or they'll have their hands together in front of their chest." And he said, "The reason they're doing that is that the holsters for their weapons are right inside their jackets on their chest." And he said, "It's just boom and they're out. And they know exactly where those are." And he said, "You know, it's a half a second to what I think he said, a half a second to 2/3 of a second faster when everything's just like right there." So lots of interesting observations. You know, so there's all these things, and I think he said a half a second to 3/4 of a second. So there's all these things, and he said the most disturbing of all of this is, he said, there were obviously lots of screw-ups. And he said, "You don't get put on a presidential detail until you've been with the Secret Service for 3 or 4 years. He said, "So this is after 3 or 4 years of training." So, you know, what do you think about all this? How did that configuration get there? There's all kinds of discussions now at this point of how did the roof actually get left unguarded? And, you know, bless the Secret Service hearts, they have not commended themselves well either in this incident or in the aftermath of this incident. You know, one of the excuses is, well, they didn't have anybody on the roof because it was a sloped roof. But it's only like 10, 10-degree sloped roof, you know. And, you know, then the other excuse was, well, local law enforcement was supposed to take care of that. And instead of doing that, they had, you know, their guys were just inside the building as opposed to on top of the building. And look, now local law enforcement has come out and said, no, we told you we weren't going to be able to cover that building. And we communicated that with you multiple times. So, you know, what do we make of all this? Hanlon's Law. Is it malice? Is it stupidity? I think one of the things that people miss in trying to make that differentiation is that there are multiple levels that are involved, and that there are levels of spirituality and physicality that are involved. So you have individuals who are making decisions that might be making those decisions based on greed or based on incompetence or, you know, based on apathy, based on anger, based on fear. And they're just individual people who, it's not malice per se, but what they don't realize is their flesh is driving them in certain directions. And maybe their flesh doesn't even have a plan. It just wants them mad. It just wants them anxious. You know, I have a buddy who's been posting a lot on Facebook, and he's obviously has Trump derangement syndrome. And he thinks he's being righteous. And he thinks he's making some great contribution to the world by calling Trump names and by pointing out all the things that Trump is and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, railing against Trump. He thinks he's doing something righteous because his flesh has convinced him of that. But all he's really doing is churning his emotions. All he's really doing is keeping his stress levels high. And the flesh loves that because it's destructive. So it'll keep doing that to him. So at the level of the human being, you've got flesh and spirit, and you have humans thinking that they're doing one thing when they're being driven to do something else. And there is malice involved at that level because the flesh hates them. And so what the flesh is trying to do is just trying to get them to adopt any behavior that is self-destructive. So that's malice. But then you also have people who are involved in larger hierarchical organizations. You have not only the flesh, you have the world. And you have these amalgams of flesh that are each being destructive on their own and then working together. And some in those organizations at middle levels are fearful and they're anxious, and that's what's driving them. And they're controllable then. And their flesh keeps them churned up because it's trying to create an environment that is destructive for them. So you've got that going on. But then as you get higher and higher in these organizations, and as the organizations get bigger and bigger and bigger, now it starts to become about power and control. And you get people making decisions there that are intentional, malicious decisions because they want more power, they want more control, they want more money. And there's more malice there, and there's certainly malice from each of their flesh, but the effect is amplified because it's cascading down through organizations. And then, of course, at the very top level, you have principalities and powers, the world, the flesh, and the devil. You have principalities and powers. And there is no question that there is malice there because Satan and his hordes hate humanity. And they want to destroy as much as they can. So in these types of situations that seem like comedy of errors, that seem like just incompetence after incompetence after incompetence, and nobody planned anything. In fact, I think behind the scenes, the plan was from each person's flesh to be as destructive as possible. And then you know, there's probably an element of coordination all the way up at the top that is satanic and demonic. So where does that leave us with all our projections as to what's coming here? Well, I think the obvious thing is this isn't over. There's more to come. And whether or not you want to just say it was luck or it was the providence of God that President Trump wasn't killed, that doesn't mean that the next assassination attempt won't be successful. And this puts, it just changes all the dynamics. Granted, you know, I did say that I believed weeks ago that the apparatus, there wouldn't really be much of a choice, that if at any point Trump really started surging and it looked like he was going to win, there would have to take him out. They would have to kill him. So this has been the first attempt. Didn't go well. Maybe. Or maybe it went exactly as it should have. It's all very, very fascinating. You had Biden continually saying that he was not going to step down. And of course, you know, that's what I was talking about last week. And I think maybe the week before that, Biden is not going to step down. He's got too big of an ego for that. And his wife apparently likes the spotlight. So, you know. But now he's saying, well, if he was told that he had a medical condition, maybe he would. So I don't know if this assassination attempt has changed something. It'll be interesting to see. But if he does not step down, I don't think the apparatchik is just going to stand idly by and let Trump get elected. I don't think they want Trump elected. And so there will have to be something else. So we'll see. As we said before, you know, it probably is Biden gets the nomination, you know, and if he keeps refusing and if he keeps sliding the polls, I just heard a poll that said that all of the named contenders in polls do better than Joe Biden does at this point against Trump. So I really think they're going to have to do something, you know. And people are saying, well, they're going to pull something at the convention and they're going to get Joe Biden. That would really surprise me. Unless they threaten him within an inch of his life or pay him off, you know, that would really, really surprise me if he voluntarily releases all his delegates. So according to the rules I know, as I've mentioned before, once he gets nominated as the presidential nominee, then after the convention, if something happens to him, then like a special group of delegates decides who the next nominee is going to be. And that probably would be the time frame for that. So it's all very, very interesting. But the apparatchik, I don't think, is going to give up this easily. And it could very well be that this assassination attempt was just a lone random gunman. And it was just the incompetence of the Secret Service. And I said to my wife, I said, so here's what the situation is. Either the Secret Service have done a bang-up job and done a great job on all the prior rallies that Trump has attended, and they just happened to fall down in a spectacular way on this one, and this just happened to be the one that a young man decides he's going to take his father's rifle and go climb up on a roof, just happens to coordinate
Or there was coordination. That's the second possibility. And things were intentionally left unguarded. Or the third possibility is that the Secret Service has just been this incompetent for who knows how many months or years. And no one noticed, no one said anything about it, and it just finally caught up with them. I have no idea which of the three that is. I don't know if there's any way to know. I do know that the apparatchik does not want Trump to be president because he's already made plenty of statements about how he's going to come after the intelligence agencies. And so they, you know, they don't want that. So it'll be very interesting to see where we go from here. Because at this point, it appears the two big threats are Biden and Trump to the apparatchik. And we'll see which one is considered the greater threat. And we'll see who gets taken out first. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.